Hello there. In the second stage of the Sales Cycle Mastery Program, we're going to be talking about two topics. Out of the six stages, this is the only one that has two topics in it. I think they're very relative. I think they're very important. And I think reps don't pay enough attention to them. Those two topics are phoning and calendar management. I think you're going to hear some things that you've probably heard a lot before. And I also think you're going to hear some things that are very new. Some of the questions that I get over time are, Jim, I don't always make all my appointments over the phone. Sometimes I do it via text or via email. But I think you'll find the concepts that are covered in this module will be transferable to both of those methods as well. And when it comes to calendar management, your time is your greatest asset. If you don't know how to use your time effectively and efficiently, then you can't embrace the activity that's necessary to grow your practice. So I really am excited about these two topics, and I think you're really going to learn a lot. So let's start with calendar management. Ask yourself, what is your greatest asset? I think you know, in the business that you're in, your greatest asset is your time. And I find that this is a real challenge for a lot of reps. We have a ton of distractions in the business, and we're pulled in many different directions. And if we're not really in charge of our calendar, it can be a big problem. So the second question you can ask yourself is, do you control your calendar? Or does your calendar control you? Most reps I work with, when I first meet them, I find that their calendar controls them. And it has to be the opposite. In order for you to have the capacity to be able to grow your activity and, let's face it, enjoy your life, you must be in control of your calendar. And that's what we're going to be talking about now. So I love Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of them says, begin with the end in mind. What that means to me is to ask the question, why? And when I say why is it that we want to fill up our calendar? And it's a lot deeper than just the obvious answer. An appointment isn't an appointment isn't an appointment. So we want to fill up our calendar with intentionality. And intentionality means that we're paying attention to a number of different aspects other than just putting an appointment on the calendar. Let's look at it this way. If we have an appointment that is in our office with somebody that we are really excited about seeing, that's a different appointment than somebody who might be a 45-minute or even an hour drive away with somebody that we're not all that excited about seeing. So those two appointments are very different. We want a lot more of the good appointments on the calendar than just an appointment for the sake of putting it on there. The second one is we want the appointment to keep. Imagine if you have to get in your car and drive 40, 45, 50, 60 minutes to get to a meeting, and the prospective client doesn't show. That's a huge waste of your time. So in addition to putting an appointment on the calendar, we really want to make sure that we're doing everything we can control to make sure that that appointment keeps. And then also, we want that client or prospective client to be looking forward to the meeting. When we end that interaction of setting it up, we do it in a fashion that they're excited about the meeting and they're absolutely looking forward to it. So those are some reasons that are deeper than just setting an appointment for the sake of filling our calendar. We want to do it with the intentionality, and we want our calendar to be efficient. So as you get to know me, you'll know that I have a strong belief, and that is that our beliefs drive our behaviors. If we want to change behavior, we must start with our belief. I also call that mindset. So one thing I teach quite a bit is starting with your own self-awareness of your mindset. And the current mindset I see in most reps is the mindset of lack of abundance, or therefore scarcity. It's almost like I've got to fill up my calendar with whoever will see me, otherwise I won't get the activity that I need to get. As opposed to the empowered mindset is that of abundance. And what that is, hey, I'm going to see as many people as I need to see week in and week out because I've got plenty of activity and plenty of people to see. The question is, how am I going to put it on my terms? How am I going to make sure that I'm seeing the right kind of people in the right location? And therefore, the opposite of which is simply saying yes to everybody just simply to fill your calendar. When you have that empowered mindset, that's when you can really begin to have your calendar management come to life and be super effective and efficient. With a scarcity mentality, it's almost impossible. No matter how good you are at implementing all of the strategies that I'm going to teach in this module, if the truth is that you have a scarcity mentality, it is next to impossible to get really efficient and effective. So I think you need to start there by asking yourself that question. Is it one of abundance or is it one of scarcity? Is it an empowered mindset? And is that the mindset that you think you need to get to or not? So I think we need to begin there. So there are a number of things that you can do to make your calendar more efficient. But let's start with what I believe is the single most important thing you can do to control your calendar that I also think reps struggle with the most. And that is to say no more often. Think about it this way. Every single time that you say yes to someone or something, you are simultaneously saying no to something else. Reps don't say no enough. It's difficult for them to say no. And when you really are in charge of your calendar, you are dictating where a meeting's gonna be, when a meeting's gonna be, with who a meeting's going to be. And if each and every time you're interacting with somebody, it doesn't measure up to your desire of how you wanna have your calendar run, you must learn how to say no. It's really important. Let me give you an example of that. Let's say for this particular example that there is a potential client that isn't somebody that you're all that excited about meeting. But because of a scarcity mentality, you feel you need to do it in order to fill up your calendar. And it's an hour drive to get to this person. It's an hour meeting with this individual. And then it's an hour drive back to your office. So you can do the math. That's 3 hours of your time. So when you do that, what is it that you said no to? Imagine if you would have said no to that prospective client, but in those same 3 hours in your office, you would spend time doing things like phoning A and A plus clients who are willing to come to your office, and you could have made 3 or 4 or 5 appointments that way. Or maybe you did some market research and you tried to find a little bit more clientele that you could call on, and you did that with that time. There are a number of other things you could have done in that same 3 hours. But instead, you chose to go see somebody that wasn't all that desirable. So be careful to all the things that you say yes to. And if you really want to ask yourself if you should be saying yes, try to also identify what are you saying no to. When you pay attention to that and you have the courage and the abundant mentality to say no more often, you'll start to see some significant strides in the right direction to get your calendar much more effective and much more efficient. So this next concept is something that I think is fairly unique to Jim Effner. I don't feel that I'm smart enough to come up with all kinds of new concepts. The teachings that I bring to the table are what I've learned from others in my almost 30-year career. But this particular one is one that I did come up with. I call it billable hours. And the concept behind billable hours is to really get in tune with how effective you are in your day. Because at the end of the day, what you really want is from the moment you leave your house in the morning to the time you get back to your house in the evening, you want to use that time where you're away from your family, you're away from your hobbies, your passions, and so on and so forth, where you're making money, you're effective, you're using that time wisely. And I see that as a huge opportunity. Let's look at it this way before I really teach you what a billable hour is. How would you feel if you left the house at, let's say, 7 in the morning, and you got back home that night at, let's say, 6 at night? So you were away from your family for 11 hours, and you found out that only one of those hours you actually got paid. Could you imagine that? If you were in like an hourly job and you got an hourly rate and you were there for 11 hours and your boss said, oh, by the way, we're only gonna pay you for one because the other 10, you weren't really doing anything. That's what reps do every single day. And the reason they do that is many. But here are a few of the big ones. Doing things that you get billed for in your business are difficult. They involve rejection. They involve interpersonal risk. They involve getting uncomfortable. Things like making phone calls where you might get rejected. Things like going out and seeing clients that might give you objections, as opposed to burying yourself in doing things on your computer or working on things that aren't all that difficult. And reps are a lot like human beings, where they take the path of least resistance. They don't necessarily do it consciously, but they do it. And they don't necessarily run to something, they run from something. So let's get started with it. What is a billable hour? A billable hour, in its most simple definition, is an hour that you spend in which you get paid for. And I have broken that down into two categories. The first and most important is an hour that you spend with a client in a meeting. And what that comes down to is where you are having a meeting for the purpose of moving your business. A lot of times I get questions around, well, Jim, I do a lot of meetings over the phone. I do go-to meetings. I use Google Hangouts. Does that count? And I would say absolutely, as long as it's a real meeting. And what is a real meeting? I think you know the answer for that. It probably would be helpful if I told you what a real meeting is not. If the meeting is simply to catch up, to have a birthday lunch, to, you know, figure something out that has nothing to do with your business, that wouldn't count. Not many people are ever going to do that in this industry face to face, but you could do that over the phone. So just make sure that if you are counting your phoning meetings, that those phoning meetings are not to gather information like outstanding underwriting requirements or getting a copy of their brokerage statement or something like that, but they're real business meetings. And for simplicity purposes, for every meeting, I give a rep one billable hour. Now, sometimes the reps will say to me, well, some of my meetings are only 30 minutes. Or some reps might say, some of my meetings are 2 hours. I don't want to get caught in the weeds. What I want you to understand is that you're making money when you're in front of clients. So let's give that a billable hour. And then the second thing you get a billable hour for is 30 phone calls that you make for the purpose of making an appointment. So you can imagine that there are certain phone calls you make that aren't for making an appointment and they don't count. You might be tracking down information. You might be calling to verify an address. You might be calling to confirm an appointment. Those don't count. It's the dials that you make to make an appointment. That's what counts. And when you do 30 of those, that's another billable hour. So let's think about it this way. Let's say that you were to leave your house at 7 in the morning and you were to get home at 5, because that's simple math. That means that you work 10 hours that day. And let's say in that given day that you have kept 3 appointments. We give you an hour for each one of those. And you made 30 phone calls to set up additional appointments. You would give yourself 4 billable hours. So now your billable hours becomes your numerator, 4, and your total work hours becomes your denominator, which is 10, which means your efficiency rate is 40%. Now that percentage is far greater than the industry average, but the industry average isn't very good. And we want you to get a lot better than that. So the most question I get asked is, hey, Jim, where should I be? The best reps that are really tapping into their full potential are in the 60s. But if you can get above 50, you are doing a really, really good job. At the end of the day, you should also want to do it, not only because that's when you get paid, but that's when you're the happiest. Hopefully, You love being with people. That's why you got in this business. And the higher percentage of time you're in meetings with people, the happier you are, as opposed to pushing paperwork, doing administrative work, putting together plans, and everything else that you catch yourself doing. So when I first bring this topic of billable hours out into the field and teach it, one of the things that almost immediately happens is it's an aha moment to most reps. They hear it, they get it, it makes sense, and they know they got an issue. They know they don't have enough, they know they need to get more. However, what they don't understand is what gets in the way. So the first thing that I want you to do in your own calendar is I want you to start thinking about what are the kind of things you're doing in the hours that aren't billable, right? We have to start there. So in order to turn some of our non-billable hours to billable hours, we have to start with an awareness of what are they? And here's some of the most common ones that I see in the field, is it's a lot of admin type work where you're doing things like underwriting, preparing ledgers, looking at one's brokerage statement, putting together financial plans. And so obviously, one of the areas where you can improve there is by either hiring staff that you don't have yet to do that kind of work, or by delegating current staff to do more of it. In the latter, what I find is happening is lack of trust. I find and run into a lot of reps that have very competent staff, but they just have this mentality that unless they do it, unless they do the entire plan, it won't look as good as if their staff doesn't. And they don't realize how much that hurts them. And I also challenge them in that. I don't really think it's that. What I think is they'd rather be spending an hour and a half burying their head into their computer than pounding the phones for 30 times and getting somebody to hang up on them, to tell them no, tell them to go pound sand. That's not fun. Nobody likes to do that. But the reality of it is they're not necessarily consciously aware of that. And so it's comfortable to sit in a computer. They like it. They're well trained. They think they can put it together in a very special way. But what they don't realize is the opportunity cost to do that. So the first thing I want you to do is really go with a fine-tooth comb and look at your non-billable hours and try to identify what exactly is it that you're doing. The admin stuff will be big, but you'll also find how much time do you spend looking at emails? Now, I don't know about you, but when I was in the field, maybe 0.5% of my emails were great news. It's not like I went and opened up my email and I'd be like, oh yeah, all right, I got another huge client. It would be a bunch of stuff that would bring me down. I call them energy wasters. And so spending time looking at your email is not effective. And so some strategies that you can think about around how can you eliminate that? Maybe only checking your email first thing in the morning and at the end of the day, but not being addicted to it all day long. The other thing is making your environment aware of how you don't want distractions, not allowing your staff to come in your office in the middle of the day when you should be making phone calls to make appointments, not allowing other people in the office to just poke their head in and waste 20 minutes of your time talking about the local sports team or the weather. So try to start with what are you doing in those non-billable hours, and then begin by trying to take care of a strategy around the low-hanging fruit. What are the easiest things that you can eliminate? Start with that. Another concept, or I should say strategy, with improving your efficiency as it relates to the billable hour is to partner up, to team up, to get somebody who together you can really figure out what is your billable rate, where are the opportunities for growth, and tracking it over time. And so the best scenario would be if you had a right-hand assistant that is working side by side with you all the time, that intimately knows your practice. So together, you can go through this. You'd go back and sit with them after watching this video, and you'd say, okay, this is what a billable hour concept is. Our first assignment is we have to figure out what our billable percentage is. Our second assignment is together, we need to brainstorm how we can improve it. And then the third thing is together, we want to track it over time to to see how we're doing and see the progress that we're making. Now, if you don't have your own assistant, maybe you have a mentor, maybe you have a manager, maybe you have somebody else that sits right next to you in the office that you could do this with. But when you have a partner, you have somebody that you can have this dialogue with, that you can work through this together, you have a much higher rate of getting it more efficient. So when you think about this concept and you really get it and you understand what billable hours are, here's what I share with a lot of people that I teach. When I meet an individual who's incredibly successful in this business, whose billable hours percentage is like off the charts, they are an intensely selfish individual. Now, I say that with a smile because that is a very negative connotation. And in this particular example, it's not negative. It's not negative at all. What I mean by that is that they know what they want. They know what they need to be doing, when they need to be doing it, and nothing gets in their way. Let me give you an example. If there is a very successful rep who is sitting in his or her office and they're making phone calls to make an appointment, and one of their admin assistants or a younger rep in the office or a friend or whoever happens to knock on the door and come in and say, "Hey, you got a minute?" That rep says, "No, get out." As opposed to, what do most reps say? "Sure, come on in." And then what happens? You kill 15, 20, 30 minutes talking about the NHL playoff game last night. That doesn't make you any money. But why do you do that? Because you feel that it might be rude to say, "No, get out." You feel that you might hurt their feelings to say, "No, get out." But at the end of the day, I'm at work because I want to get paid. Work is not my social life. And so if I'm not going to be getting paid, I'd rather be with my wife. I'd rather be with my kids. I'd rather be on the golf course. I'd rather be at my lake house. But if I'm at work, I want to be working. And so I'm not going to kill 30 minutes talking about the NHL playoffs when I should be making dials. And if I hurt their feelings, too bad. That's how you need to think. That will sound good, but it's not easy. But almost all successful people know what they need to be doing, when they need to be doing it, and they don't care what other people think. So once again, with the very first step in this system, let's go back to Stephen Covey's concept, begin with the end in mind. So that concept on this topic is creating your ideal calendar. So that's what I want to teach you how to do. Here you're going to see an example of mine way back in the day when I first started in the business. And I want to teach you how I did mine, but I don't want you to use mine. What I want you to do is I want you to do your own within your own style. And at the end of the day, one that you look at and you say that when my life gets like this, my life is awesome. But we have to begin with what an ideal calendar looks like. So in your exercise, when you're working on this, you're going to sit down, imagine this, and you're going to put together when you come to work and when you get home and where you go and what happens in between every single day of the week. And what you want to do is you want to look at that and say, "Holy mackerel, if I do that, my life is awesome." So let me just walk you through my calendar and how I went about it in hopes that it can be an effective tool for you when you build yours. So let's go across the top. Now, I'm from Chicago. When I was a rep, I was in downtown Chicago. We call that the Loop or downtown. And so you'll see as you go across the top of that calendar, the different topics say either in office, downtown, or certain suburb. So I knew that on Mondays and on Wednesdays, my clients were going to come to me. On Tuesdays and on Thursdays, those were days where I went to them. I was still downtown Chicago. I was still in the Loop, but I would go to them. And then every Friday was my suburb day. Might be a northern suburb day, a western suburb day, or whatever. So that's what those headings are there. Imagine how inefficient it would be if you understand Chicago, you'd even understand this more. If I started out my day in downtown Chicago, and then I drove out for a 10 o'clock meeting in the western suburbs, and then I drove back for a lunch meeting in Chicago, and then I drove for a 2:30 meeting in the northern suburbs, and then I ended the day back downtown at 4 o'clock. I would wanna like stick a sharp stick in my eye with all the traffic and all the downtime. I just wouldn't wanna do that, and I hope you wouldn't want to either. We wanna be efficient with our time, and that also means that you've gotta geographically line it up that way. And so that's why I did that at the top of my calendar. So now you can see, I also designed it in a way that I have a number of appointments in early part of the week. There's two reasons for that. The first reason is this business is a lot about momentum. When I come in and I start off a week after having a great weekend, I like to have what I call a good tired on Monday and Tuesday. It's kind of like when I'm skiing. You know, I ski all day long. I sit down in the hot tub at the end of the day and have a beer. I'm exhausted, but I feel great. I just worked my butt off on the mountain. You know, that's how I wanted to be at the end of the day on Monday and Tuesday. Those are my hardest work days. I'd see a ton of people and I'd come home almost exhausted. But boy, did it start off the week with a lot of momentum. So you'll see at the very bottom, I would have 11 appointments scheduled on my day on Monday. Now, back when I used this calendar, I was running at about a 50% cancellation rate. So therefore, you'll see where there's two X's. I had to double schedule those meetings so that I could balance having enough appointments in the day. So I don't think I ever once saw 11 people. There were some days where I saw 7. I think once I saw 8 in a day, which was exhausting. But at the end of the day, I would average somewhere around 5 or 6 if I had 11 on the books. And then you'll see I had 8 on the books on Tuesday, 6 on the books on Wednesday. Part of that is what I already covered. I wanted to work really hard in the front part of the week. But the other reason was for those meetings that would reschedule on Monday or Tuesday, I had a lighter schedule on Wednesday and Thursday that I could put them in those slots later on in the week. So that was the other strategy. So that's what you really need to do when you create your ideal calendar. I also wanted to have a partner who had a vested interest in it. So if you count up all those meetings, you'll see in the lower right-hand corner where it says 30 X's, that means 30 appointments. It was important for me to have 30 appointments on my following week's calendar when I left on Friday. I learned that early on in the business. I don't know about you, but here's what I realized about me. I love to have fun. I love to have fun on the weekends. I wanted to recharge my batteries on the weekends and not think about work. But what I found is that when I was younger in the business, if the calendar the following week wasn't filled up anywhere near where I wanted it, all I would think about was work over the course of the weekend. I wasn't having fun and I wasn't fun to be around. And so I wanted to change that. What I also realized was the opposite. That when I left on Friday, if I knew my calendar the following week was locked and loaded the way I wanted it, I was fired up. I had a great weekend, and so I wanted that. So I would put together an incentive with my staff, and we had a deal that when I left on Friday, if the following week my calendar was set the way it should be set, that there would be an incentive for them in order so they could benefit as well, because they made some appointments in the calendar as well. It wasn't just me. So therefore, having a partner is a big deal. So therefore, homework step number one for you is set aside some time and create your ideal calendar. But here's what I'll share that I find more often than not. It's energizing for reps. Once I teach this concept, they look forward to doing it. And they do it, but that's like 10% of it. The other 90% is living it. That's what is a challenge. And I find reps have a very difficult time when they have the appointment time scheduled. Let's use 11:30. And a client says, well, I could come by at 11. And they say what? Sure, come on by at 11. They don't say, no, I have 11:30 or 1. Which one would be better for you? Or they have a time set, as I said earlier, in the suburbs, and the person wants them to change that to a different day. That's very distracting to be inefficient. You need to operate like a doctor. I'll end with this analogy. Imagine this. So you've all seen a doctor from time to time. Let's say that there's an orthopedic surgeon that does knees and you have a bad knee. And this orthopedic surgeon has office days, office visits, on Monday and Wednesday and Friday, and they do surgery on Tuesday and Thursday. And you call them up and you say, hey, doc, here's the deal. I heard you're great, but you know, I need you to do my surgery on your office day. That won't be a problem, will it? No doctor would do that, you know, because their surgery days are their surgery days and their office visit days are their office visit days. That's the same mentality you need to have with your practice. So good luck in this exercise. So let's look at this second step. As you've already built your ideal calendar, the second step is for you to have a system and a way for you to always, first and foremost, have a relentless desire to fill up your ideal calendar, but second of all, to always know exactly where you stand. So I probably abuse this analogy, but it makes my point and everybody gets it. Imagine if you set out to lose 30 pounds. How are you going to do that? The best way to do that is to know every single day exactly where you stand for your goal. So every morning you gotta wake up, you gotta step on the scale, and you gotta write your weight down on a board. And if you know that and you know every single day, you're much more likely to achieve your goal. So that concept applies here. So if you set a goal, use my numbers from my calendar. This isn't gonna be yours, but for teaching purposes, I wanted to have 30 appointments on the calendar for the following week. So in order to do that, I always had to know exactly where I stood. And I always had to have a relentless desire to get it done by Friday of the previous week. So for example, if on Tuesday at 2:30 in the afternoon, I was walking down the hallway and you stopped me and you said, hey Jim, what's your ideal amount of appointments next week? Without looking at my calendar, I would have been able to tell you 30. And if you said, how many do you have right now? I would have been able to tell you whatever it was. Let's say 18, I got 12 to go. I would know that every single moment because it was really, really important to me. Just that level of awareness and that relentless desire to get to the 30 before I left that week was all I needed to make this process work, and you need to do the same. So there's all kinds of strategies or techniques you can use to do that. This is what I recommend. I taught you the 7-minute stand-up meeting in the prospecting module. And that's where in the very first thing of the day, you would meet with your staff in a stand-up meeting. Yes, it is standing up. And yes, it is only 7 minutes. And you might have 2 or 3 topics that are very quick and to the point. In the prospecting module, I taught you that you would say, okay, what's our number of prospects that we want for the month? You might say 48 or 50 or whatever the number is. And the second question would be, where are we at? How many do we have? We've got 30, we've got 20 to go or 18 to go. And that level of awareness is a big deal in prospecting. It's the same concept and principle here. So in this particular one, you would say with your staff in that 7-minute meeting, what's our ideal amount of appointments we have next week? 30 or whatever your number is. And where do we stand? And you would say that. And it would bring a heightened level of awareness, not just to you, but also to your staff person. So they also have a vested interest. And then you can effectively communicate how you're gonna get there. So for example, if your number's 30 and you're at 12 and it's Tuesday, it's not just to stop there, but it's okay, we have 18 to go. How many of those 18 are you gonna make? How many of those 18 am I gonna make? And together with a heightened level of awareness of where you stand, effectively communicating on a consistent basis, and you having a relentless desire to get to the goal by the end of the week will really bring this step to life. Good luck. The next step in this sales cycle is easy to say. It is easy to write it on your calendar. But what I find is that it's very difficult for most reps to really, truly honor it. And what I'm talking about is taking your phoning time and scheduling it on your calendar for whatever amount of phoning time you know you need in order to get the activity that you want and put it on your calendar and honor it. You have to treat it as if it's an A-plus client. Your phone is a critical tool to you getting your calendar management to extraordinary efficiencies. And so therefore, you have to treat it that way. And it's also important that you make that statement with your team. The moment your team sees you putting other things in your phoning time, it doesn't have the level of relevance that it needs to have. And so you do not want to let anything else interfere. An example of that might be that you have a client that calls you that wants to meet you. In my slot, it was 9 to 10:30. Says, Jim, I'll meet you at 9 o'clock. No, that's my phoning time. And we're tempted, especially if we have a theory of scarcity. Wow, this is somebody I really want to see. They're giving me the appointment. They're telling me that I can see them at 9 o'clock. And I'm supposed to say no? Yes, because you've got to honor your phoning time. It's really important process in this cycle. So now let's move on to phoning. The goal of phoning is simple, to get the appointment. And let's keep our mind focused in on that. I find way too many reps chit-chat way too long. The purpose of the phone is to get the appointment, period. And the other thing I want to say is it's the gateway to what you really love to do. So many reps say to me, I hate the phone, or they hire other people to phone for them. Get over it. At the end of the day, it's the gateway to do what you really love to do. I always tell this story. I don't think I ever have met, I don't think I ever will meet, a surgeon who loves to scrub down, who loves to wash their hands. Nobody goes to med school to do that. They are passionate about performing surgery, but yet they have to do the scrub down to get to what they're passionate about. It's the same with you. Hopefully you're passionate about changing lives, about delivering financial security, about meeting with your clients. But in order to do that, you gotta set up the appointment over the phone. So it's just simply the gateway to you doing what you really love to do. When you look at it that way, I think it's much more palatable. So if we do get that, if we understand that the goal of phoning is simply to make the appointment, what that means as we begin to study language and I teach you techniques is that we have to stick with just that purpose, making the appointment. We don't want to talk on the phone about all the things we do, how we do them, why we're different, what specifically we get involved in, what specifically we don't get involved in. We'll talk about all that in the meeting. The purpose of the phone is just to make the appointment. So get to the point, get the appointment, and move on. When you get somebody and you have a phoning engagement and you make that appointment, it should be no more than 2 to 2.5 minutes, not a 15-minute dialogue. Let's remember that. So when I talk about my beliefs as it relates to phoning out in the field, I get a lot of laughs, I get a lot of humor, but that's not my intention, although I'm sure you probably will feel the same when I share this with you. But here are my beliefs. My beliefs are that if I'm phoning somebody and I'm calling to make an appointment, that unless I'm able to get an appointment with them, I can't do anything. But if I do get an appointment with them, I can change their life. I can bring financial security to their life. And because I feel very strongly about that, I am somewhat manipulative sometimes when it comes to the phone, which is unlike every other behavior in my business and in my life. Having authenticity, having trust, being honest, being transparent are all critically important to me whenever I'm with a client. I'm not saying I throw all that out the window on the phone, but here might be an example of a little bit of an exaggeration. Let's say I'm calling somebody in Chicago who's in the IBM building. I might say, hey, I understand you're in the IBM building. I'm gonna be in that building next Tuesday. Would it be okay if I stop by at 2 o'clock? You know, I might not have anything in the IBM building next Tuesday, but I don't feel bad saying that because my goal is to get the meeting. And then once I get that meeting, great things can come out of it. So I just wanted to share that with you. So the next step in this system is your phoning language. And let's get really clear on why that is so important. It's not necessarily what you say. It's not like if you get really good language, you're gonna get a substantially higher percentage of appointments than if your language isn't all that good. Your language is, believe it or not, more for you than it is for the client. It gives you a track to run on. When you know your language and you know it exceptionally well, I always say, you know, you could wake me up at 3 a.m. in the deepest REM, put a flashlight in my face and say, go. And I could eloquently spit out my phoning language because I've done it 10,000 times. When you have that, it eliminates fear. It gives you confidence. And so your language and your track to run on is way more for you than it is for the person that you're talking to. The other benefit of having your language down and having it be delivered in a great way is that when you're not thinking about what you need to say, you can concentrate more on things like your tone, your inflection, your passion, and really feel as if I want to stand and I want that client that I'm phoning to feel as if I'm reaching through the phone and grabbing them by the neck because I'm so stinking positive and passionate about what I do. I want them to feel that. And therefore, you can focus on that if you don't have to think about what you're saying. There's a couple other techniques before I give you my language. First is you always want to end every single ask with two time slots. Because what that does is it allows you to set up that their objection would be perhaps not necessarily on that they don't want to meet you, but perhaps the time or the day doesn't work well for them. So when you do your phoning, I want you to be prepared. I want you to stop winging it. I want you to set aside some time to bullet point what you think your language should be. I'm going to give you mine. You're more than welcome to use it. But at the same time, you should design it so it's authentic to your personality. So it doesn't come across as a robot. It doesn't come across as a script. It comes across as genuine and authentic. So if I was phoning somebody that let's say is the name of Tim, and let's say that I got referred to Tim from Mary Smith, the phone would ring, Tim would answer, I'd say, hey Tim, it's Jim Effner from XYZ Company, how you doing today? He might say, well, good, Jim. And I'd say, hey, listen, I don't know if Mary Smith had the opportunity to tell you that I'd be calling. Hopefully she did. And more often than not, he would say, you know, actually she didn't. And then I would try to break the tension with a little bit of humor and say, well, that's too bad. She promised me she would. I'll have to give her a hard time. But now that I got you on the phone, let me tell you the purpose of my call. I am with XYZ Company. I'm in the financial planning business. Mary Smith had no reason whatsoever to assume that you'd be interested. But knowing me and knowing you, she thought that a meeting between the two of us would serve to our mutual benefit, and I was calling simply to set that up. I understand you're in the IBM building. I'm going to be by that way next Tuesday. Would 10 o'clock or 2:30 be better for you? In a little bit, I'll cover when you get objections, how to best handle that. But let's take it a step further now in what happens if there's not an objection. It's just simply a clarification. They might be interested in meeting me. They just want to know a little bit more. The most common one might be an example like this, where they say, well, Jim, what is it again that you do? And now before I give you that response, let me tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to say, well, I do financial planning. I put together a plan. I manage assets. I do estate planning. I've got all these things I do. I'm not going to do any of that. I'll get to that in the meeting. I'm simply going to say, well, as I mentioned, I'm in the financial planning business. But once again, Mary Jones didn't assume you'd be interested. However, she insisted that a meeting between the two of us would be to our mutual benefit. Having said that, like I said, I'm going to be in the IBM Tower next Tuesday. Would 10:30 or 2 o'clock be better for you? So therefore, I'm just getting right to the point. I'm keeping that clear, concise, and compelling. I'm not going on pontificating forever on all the different things that they do. Another example might be if they said, well, could you send me something? And I might say, you know what, Ben, there's a tons of things I could send you. I've got file cabinets upon file cabinets. But quite frankly, Mary Jones didn't assume you'd be interested in anything. At this point in time, I wouldn't even know where to begin. But she did say that a meeting between the two of us would serve to our mutual benefit. Having said that, would next Tuesday at 10 or 2:30 be better for you? The next step in this sales cycle is you having a very well thought through, professional, concise and compelling response to the top. I say 3 to 5 objections and you use them every time, but the more I process it, I really think there's really only 2 or 3. There might be a few others, but I'm going to give you examples of all of those. But before I do, here's what I'm really trying to say. You hear them all the time. You should not be surprised. You should not be caught off guard, and you should not have to try to think creatively like, ooh, what am I going to say this time? It should be almost like a boxer in the ring that completely is able to avoid a punch and come right after somebody with a jab right away without even flinching. And that's how you should be because you hear these all the time. Let's start with the first that I found to be the most common. And that would be somebody saying, you know, no thanks, Jim, I'm busy. And so before I give you that response, let's take that up to 30,000 feet and just think through it a little bit. Is that first and foremost, of course you're busy. You know, that's why I'm calling you. If you weren't busy, I wouldn't be calling you, because I only call on successful people, and I very rarely met anybody who's successful who's not busy. So that's not really an answer that I'm gonna buy, because every single client I have is busy. And so the second thing I wanna help them understand is that I know that, but I also wanna once again repeat that the nominator didn't say they'd be interested, but they absolutely said that a meeting between the two of us would serve to our mutual benefit. So I'm really leveraging the strength of the relationship between the nominator and this individual. So I want them thinking in their mind like, well, you know, if Mary thinks it's a good use of my time, I guess I'll meet you. That's what I'm trying to really play on. So if somebody says that to me and says, Jim, no thanks, I'm busy, I'd say, hey, Ben, I can understand and appreciate that. All of my clients are busy. Once again, Mary Jones didn't assume that you'd be interested in anything, but she was insistent the fact that two of us meeting would be to our mutual benefit. Having said that, if Tuesday at 1 or 4 doesn't work for you, I'm once again going to be in the IBM building on Friday. Would 9 or 2:30 be better for you? So that's how I'm going to overcome that particular objection without even missing a beat. So here's the second most common objection that I used to hear is, hey, Jim, I've already got a guy. I've already got a financial advisor. That would be a very common one. And what I would say to that is I would say, hey, Ben, I would be shocked if you didn't already have a guy or a advisor. Based on the caliber and the quality of the individual you are that Mary Jones told me about, I assumed you already had a guy. But let me tell you what happens in my practice is that when we get together, one of two things is gonna happen. First of all, is that I'm gonna just give you the positive affirmation that the guy that you have and the advisor that you have is already doing a great job, and you've got every I dotted and you've got every T crossed. And when that happens, people that I meet with feel that much better about the person they're working with. The second thing that could happen is I could uncover some areas of opportunity that perhaps the individual that you're working with did not have the opportunity to think through. And when that happens, they're certainly glad that they have met me. Given the fact that Mary Jones feels that it would be to our mutual benefit to meet, if Tuesday at 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock doesn't work for you, how about Friday? Would 9 a.m. or 1 p.m. be better for you? Let's go into the third most common objection, and that's where the individual says, oh, no thanks, I'm all set. In other words, in their mind, they feel as if they've got everything covered. They don't need an advisor. Could mean that they do it all on their own, or they've already have an advisor, but at the end of the day, the bottom line is they feel they're all set. They've got all their stuff done. And it's gonna be a very similar response that I had on the second objection. But if Ben Smith said that to me and Mary Jones was the person that introduced me, I would say, hey, Ben, I could totally understand and appreciate that. As you can imagine, a number of my clients felt that way when I first reached out to them. However, once again, Mary Jones had no reason to assume you'd be interested, but she definitely insisted that a meeting between the two of us would serve to our mutual benefit. And here's what I find happens in that meeting. It's really just one of two things. You just get further confirmation that you truly are all set, and given something as important as financial planning, it makes you feel that much better about your situation. The second thing that could happen is I could uncover some areas that you were just not totally privy to. And if that happens, most people are very glad that they met me, because otherwise they would have never been aware of those situations. The way I look at that, Ben, is either one of those is a positive outcome. Having said that, if Tuesday at 1 or 4 don't work for you, I'm also going to be in IBM Plaza on Friday. Would 9 a.m. or 2:30 be better for you? The next thing I want you to look into when it comes to phoning is I want you to assess your ratios. The old saying that says everything's irrelevant unless you have something to compare it to. Imagine baseball. Imagine if you had nothing to compare it to and you had no idea what is good or what is bad. And you go up to bat and through the course of a season, you get hits, let's say 40% of the time. You're batting 400. Are you frustrated because the other 60% of the time you're not getting hits? If you really realize that 400 is like Hall of Fame ratio, that's a different deal, right? So you have to know what you're comparing your numbers to. So the two ratios that I want to teach you in this particular slide is, first and foremost, is your dialed to reached ratio. What percentage of people should you be getting a hold of when you call them? And the number is right between 20 to 22%. So if you're at 10 or 12 or 15%, you got some work to do. If you're over that, don't change anything. Keep it at where it is. But I also don't want you to be naive about this. It's not about finding the right time to call them, okay? More often than not, the reason that people aren't picking up the phone is they don't recognize your number and they don't want to talk to you. And so it's not that they're not available. And so what do you do in that situation? You really need to lean on the nominator. They should be waiting for your phone call. They should have some desire to talk to you because the nominator who gave you their name, who gave you that referral, already called them and gave them a heads up. So my guess is if your ratio is lower than that, what you really want to do is get better nominations when you get referrals. The second ratio is when you actually reach somebody, you have a conversation with them. What percentage of the time should you be landing an appointment? And that ratio is 50% of the time. Yeah, really good reps are much better than that in the mid to high 70s. But if you're at 50% or better, you're doing a really good job. But if you don't know where you are, your first piece of homework assignment from this is to figure that out, to assess that. And then you have some information that you can work on with that. If you're much lower than 50%, it could be that you got to get better at your language. It could be that you have to go through 3 objections. You're not doing that. It could mean that you have to get much more robust in your nonverbal communication, or it could be all the above. But I can tell you that some of my best clients I got on the 3rd objection, having the patience to hang in there. It's uncomfortable, but people are programmed to say no right out of the gate. If I get in my car and I drive an hour to a Nordstrom's because I have a certain pair of shoes I want, I mean, I'm going an hour out of my way to get there. As a human, I am programmed that when I walk in the shoe department, the salesperson walks up to me and says, "Can I help you, sir?" What's my first response? "No, I'm just looking." BS, I'm not just looking. I just drove an hour to get a pair of shoes. But it's just my normal human response. And I feel the same way in phoning. When you get a hold of people, their first response is no. But don't take it personally. Hang in there and have patience. You have a small percentage of getting on your first ask, a higher percentage on the second ask, and a much higher percentage on the 3rd ask. So if you're not at 50%, I bet you that that's the first area that you got to change, is hang in there for 3 objections. So I would tell you that 2 of the most common questions I get as it relates to phoning, other than what we've already covered, are, "Hey Jim, how do you leave a message?" Or, "Hey Jim, how do you confirm an appointment?" And around the leaving the message isn't just how do you leave a message, but how often do you do it? If I get referred to somebody, I'm not gonna leave them a voicemail every day for 10 days. They're gonna think I'm stalking them. You know, that's a little strange, that's a little uncomfortable. So I wouldn't do that. I have found that reps have various different styles in how often they leave a message. I would say I would leave a message no more than once a week. However, I might try to call them more often than that. And if I didn't get a hold of them, I'd just hang up. But once a week, I would leave a message. But there's no science to that. You'll have to feel that out and figure out what you feel comfortable with. In my teaching, I'm more focused on what do I actually say, okay? And I have found that if I'm not getting a hold of them, more often than not, it's because the individual that referred me to them hasn't had a chance to talk to them. And you know that happens a lot, where you ask somebody to give them a heads up and they say they will, but they just get busy or they don't want to do it or whatever. And so when I'm calling them and I get Ben Smith's voicemail, I might say, "Hey Ben, it's Jim Effner. I'm with XYZ Company and I'm calling on behalf of Mary Jones. And hopefully she's already had an opportunity to talk to you a little bit, but if not, do me a favor, give her a call. She'll tell you a little bit about who I am and why I'm calling, and then give me a call back. My number is blah, 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 blah." What I'm doing there is just forcing the nomination. What I'm counting on is that Ben's gonna call Mary and say, "Hey, who's this Effner guy calling me?" And she's gonna say, "Oh yeah, that's right, sorry, my bad, I forgot. He's my advisor, he's really good at what he does, and you should talk to him." And then I have a much higher probability of getting that appointment. For confirming appointments, this is where individuals who have a relatively high cancellation rate, relatively high meaning anything more than like 33%, because what you don't want to do, especially if you got to get in your car and go somewhere, is that you don't want to go somewhere and be stood up where you got to drive 30, 40, 50 minutes, an hour to get there and find out that they're not there. So the day before, you probably want to confirm the appointment. But I found that in phoning, it's the heat of the moment kind of thing that makes the appointment. So your energy, your passion on the phone, a week ago, they're like, "Yeah, I'll see you." But then life gets in the way and they start thinking all the reasons why they really don't want to see you. So you don't want to give them an out when you're calling to confirm the appointment. You don't want to say, hey, I'm calling just to make sure we're still on, because more often than not, they'll say, boy, it's funny you called, we're not. Something's come up. So what I want to do is I want to, of course we're still on. You gave me the appointment. I told you I'd be there. When I'm confirming the appointment, I'm using it as the purpose of the call is just simply to make sure I've got down the right address and the right location. Or if they're coming to me, that they have my right address and my right location. So it might sound like this if it's a voicemail. Hey, Ben, it's Jim Effner. Super excited about our meeting tomorrow at 11:30. I can't remember whether or not I gave you my address or not, so I just wanted to do that again. Once again, it's 123 Main Street, Suite 350. See you tomorrow. And that's all I'm doing. I'm not saying, hey, are we still on or are you still good? I'm using the address to be able to pull off the assumed consent. So there you have it. There's your system for phoning and calendar management, broken down into 5 steps. Let's review those now. It started out with step number 1, create your ideal calendar. You have to know where you're going. You have to begin with the end in mind, and that should give you a lot of energy. So sit down and draft that up. That encompasses a work-life balance, but at the same time, simultaneously, allows you to accomplish your business goals. And then number 2, you've got to figure out a way to adapt a relentless desire to fill every single one of those slots up, and also know where you stand at every single moment in the day. I taught you the 7-minute stand-up meeting, where every day you're meeting with your right-hand person and you're talking about how many do we have on the calendar next week and how many is the ideal number and how many are you gonna fill up and how many am I gonna fill up. I likened it to losing weight and stepping on the scale and looking at the number every single day, knowing where you stand. Then we went to the 3rd step, which is phoning time needs to be scheduled and needs to be honored, just as if you would do with an A-plus client. You have to do that and you have to honor it, and you can't let anything slip into that schedule. Your staff is watching you. It makes a huge statement. When you focus on fulfilling that time that you've already set up on your calendar, you're that much more likely to fill your calendar up. Then we went to the 4th step, and that was your language. And I said, you gotta have a track to run on, and you should be able to know it like all the time. If I woke you up at 3 a.m, you should be able to just eloquently deliver it, because repetition is the motherhood of all learning. And once you've done it over and over and over and over again, you can think about the other things that are important with it, which is your tone inflection, the smile on your face, and coming across as if you're jumping through the phone, grabbing them by the neck because you're so energized and passionate about what you do. That creates attraction power. And then we talked about having the 5th step, which is having a professional, concise, and compelling response to every single objection you're gonna get. There's really only 3 or 4 out there. And by now, if you've been in the business, you've heard them all 1,000 times. You shouldn't be caught off guard. And you shouldn't have to think about, oh, what do I say now? It should just be automatic. Smooth as silk without even skipping a beat. But there's your system. There's your one pager. This works really well in teaching how to do each one of these, which is what we just did. But please remember, it also works as a fabulous self-diagnostic tool that a year from now, 6 months from now, 3 years from now, you can go back and give yourself a score on each one of these 5 areas and ask yourself where you're dropping the ball, and then get back on it again. So good luck with this.